Hi, this is Deb Fina, and I'm the mayor of the city of Champaign. And today I am joined by Councilmember Kathy Shannon and Plan Commissioner Adani Sanchez. And but I'm going to have you guys introduce yourselves. But before I do that, we're not really here to talk about your city roles. We're here to talk about the CU Urbanism Club. So, but do tell about your city roles as you introduce yourselves. And I'll start with Councilmember Shannon.
Hi, so my name is Kathy Shannon. I was recently elected for the first time to Champaign City Council. Prior to that, I had been on the Champaign Unifor School Board for 8 years. My children have both graduated from our public schools, from Central High School, and I thought it was time to move on to something else. With Councilmember Bruno announcing that he was not running for re-election, I thought it was the perfect time to step into a role at City Council. I have been following city government closely, not just as a school board member, but also as a member of the Curbanism Club and just advocating for new urbanism principles in general. So I felt pretty well prepared to step into that role.
And Adani.
Hi, my name is Adani Sanchez. I am a brand new plan commissioner. I'm very excited. I actually got into urbanism and through kind of my nonprofit job, I'm the client services coordinator at Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, where we help people access healthcare services, navigate the healthcare system. And one of the big things we started kind of realizing, and this is something across the board throughout the country that people are really connecting the dots with, is housing and how it affects health and how people are able to go through with treatment plans, take regular medication, just be safe. And housing is a key role in that and keeping people healthy. And so through that avenue, I started kind of taking a bigger interest in urbanist ideas and realizing the policy, the way that policy impacts, just like it does in the healthcare system. You know, everyone's kind of dealt with that, how policy kind of restricts what you can and can't do. And so realizing that in the housing, through the housing issues that we have in our community and just all over different areas, that's where I got into this. And so now I'm really excited to kind of take a bigger role in figuring out what that is, what that looks like here, how can we make it better and make it work for everyone.
That's awesome. So I'm going to confess to our audience that I'm a nerd. I'm a little bit of a planning and urbanism nerd. And one of the fun things I did during the pandemic was read some books in a book club that Kathy was a part of that really got me interested in some of the concepts that I think your club is, you know, working toward implementing in Champaign. And, you know, I think it might be fun to suggest some of those books to our listeners as well, because if they're listening to this, hopefully they're the kind of people who are interested in walkable, bikeable cities that, you know, care about density and affordability of housing and are really looking to us and the people that we serve with to start implementing some of those ideas. I think works best when it's a little bit of a conversation and not just me shooting a question, you know, now Kathy, now Adani. And so, you know, I'm going to invite you to kind of join in and really tell me the story about how Curbanism started. And I'm going to hope that maybe a little bit of that was our book club during the pandemic. But I'm going to turn it over to the two of you to talk about this club that you're so passionate about.
The book club, I think a lot of that was kind of the brainchild of former council member Angie Bricks. And I had heard that she was advocating for incremental development at the city level. And I knew that she had read the book Strong Towns by Charles Marone, which was a book that I had read and was really interested in. So I think that was probably the first book that we discussed in our book club. So while I guess I'm going to forget a little bit the parallel timelines here between the book club and Curbanism Club. But at some point, Adani and I, who knew each other through advocacy for many other things, started talking about, well, how do we make these things happen in the Champaign-Urbana area? I knew from my time on school board that a lot of times people don't show up to public meetings when they're excited about things, when they're in support about things. They show up to public meetings when they're upset, when they disagree with things. And we decided that we needed an organized group to show up and say yes to things, to advocate positively, to say, yes, we want to have more bikeable, accessible infrastructure. Yes, we want to have more neighbors. We want to have more housing choices. And do that in a fun environment, not in a homework kind of way, like, oh, this is drudgery, we have to show up, we have to, so we want it to be very social. We want to show people that this can be an exciting, happy thing. I'm going to let Adani take it from there.
Yeah, it was really exciting for Kathy and I. We had a conversation and I think we kind of just like heard the other person say something that was kind of like, oh, like, this is code for urban planning issues, you know, and kind of like hearing that and being like, oh my God, well, yeah, the effects of redlining are still being perpetuated right now, like in this zoning, you know, in this zoning stuff that's happening right now. And so kind of feeling that spark of that and kind of realizing, oh, like maybe if we let other people know that we were interested in these things, or if we kind of just created like a space to talk about these things, maybe we would find out that people are interested. And I think I have definitely been surprised at the variety, like the bike enthusiasts, like realizing even someone who's like been, like we're talking about knowing each other through other advocacy avenues. And like, I didn't realize that these other advocacy agencies kind of existed, and just realizing the organization behind all of our bike community is huge and excited and enthusiastic, and kind of seeing people come out to support that has been so exciting. People who are pedestrians, who enjoy our bus system, who rely on our bus system, seeing the passion coming from so many different angles, right? So I came in through like, oh, I think we need more housing options in our community. I'm not sure if we're doing enough to make sure that happens. And now learning so much more from just people who are like, oh, we heard you were talking about trains, or like, we heard you were talking about this. And so very much focusing on making this a fun place for people to learn about new things, be excited, have access. And I think I try to be obvious that I'm not an expert. I'm someone who's interested and who anecdotally enjoys living in a place where I don't have to, we drive our car, we have one car between two people, and I don't have to drive my car, but like once every 2 weeks, maybe, unless there's something, you know, extra happening. But I work downtown in Champaign, I play downtown, I hang out downtown, I get my haircut downtown, you know, my gym is downtown. So
you're a great advertisement. I love that.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to find a house that has a little backyard in like really close to downtown Champaign. And so I'm like, you know, I have a vested interest in like encouraging more connectivity between neighborhoods, more connectivity for people, you know, in my own selfish way of just like, oh, I want to be able to like bike to my friend's house. I want to be able to be in a neighborhood where we're all together and someone can just walk over to feed my cat or something like that. So I definitely have a vested anecdotal interest, but also just enthusiasm for how much better my life has been now that I don't have to drive my car everywhere. I go visit my parents in Texas and I have to drive half a mile because there's a highway bisecting our city, and there's no sidewalk, there's no walk signs, it's just a mess. And so it's just like I have to spend like 4 hours in a car in this town that's only got 40,000 people in it. Like, it's not like it's, you know, a metropolitan area where it's like, oh, it's huge, like you got to drive. No, it's so it's just been very exciting to kind of see. I'm learning so much as we meet more people and get interested in more things. So it's been really exciting.
That's great. So I want to go back and talk about what the core values are for your club. And the kinds of things that, I mean, you've touched on them, but let's really explain to people who don't get the to talk to every day, right? What it is that your goals are, and you know what, and how people can get involved if they're interested in those goals.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kathy and I kind of talk about it as in like we want people to have options, and that means options in housing, choosing where they want to live and how they want to live, whether that's apartment living, whether that's single family housing, whether that's a duplex or townhome. We want people to have options for transportation. Being in a community that forces you to buy a car, that's not equity. If you have to go to your job, but the only way you can go to your job is through a car that's very expensive to maintain, that loses value, you know, that can be very difficult. I don't think that that's equity. And housing and options for being in community with people. So like having public spaces where you can be and interact with other people. So having options for that, having places where you can go, where you can build community, where it's safe to be, where you have fun. Right? Like that's, you know, that's part of freedom. That's part of life and, in, you know, enjoying yourself and feeling fulfilled, right? So having a variety of options. And so that's kind of how we talk about it. It's just like, we want there to be lots of options for people, regardless of, you know, what their income level is, you know, what their status is, socioeconomic status is, you know, whether or not they have a car.
So Kathy, you used a word incremental development in the beginning of what you were talking about. And I want you to try to define that a little bit. And it doesn't have to be the textbook definition, but how does that, what is it and how does it fit into what you all are working toward?
So I'm going to try to remember close to the definition that is used in the Strong Towns book. And they have two principles. They say, no neighborhood is immune from change, and no neighborhood should experience sudden radical change. So what that means is that every neighborhood should allow the next level of density. So, you know, with single family only neighborhoods, we allow them to build duplexes. With neighborhoods that can already have duplexes, we allow them to build small apartment buildings, you know, between 4 and 8 units. And for neighborhoods that already allow 4 to 8 unit apartment buildings, we allow larger apartment buildings. We know that East Central Illinois has a housing shortage at all levels. You know, we desperately need more affordable housing, but we also need more starter housing. And surprisingly, we need more upper level housing because there just isn't enough at all levels. This is a great community and a lot of people want to live here. So we do need to build more housing. And if we build it further out on the edges, then people have to spend more time. Yeah, sorry about the cat. People have to spend more time commuting. They can spend less time with their families, less time at their jobs. So it really is a huge quality of life issue to allow more levels of housing. Another thing that I specifically want to point out in the city goals is we have also talked about incremental commercial development. We have a little bakery, coffee shop, Hopscotch, that is right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And that is hugely popular in that neighborhood. It's, you know, the traditional goal of zoning is to separate residential from commercial, from industrial. But if we instead allow some smaller commercial developments, some restaurants, some neighborhood bars, like for example, Huber's, then people can walk to those places. They can use them as gathering places. They're sometimes called third spaces. They're not work, they're not home, but they're places that we socialize, where we can be in, where we can meet our neighbors. And we really create community that way. That's how we create our friendships. Not just, you know, a mix of income levels, a mix of genders, a mix of races, but hopefully also a mix of ages. So people like children and older people who maybe aren't as likely to drive as young, healthy people can all gather and can all understand each other and each other's needs better. So I guess that's what I think of when I think of incremental development.
Yeah, Adani.
Yeah, I was like thinking about what are the places when you go back to visit a town that you really enjoy, like what are those places that you're going back to visit? Or like where do you want to get a pastry from? And it's usually not like, I mean, a lot of people stop at Starbucks, right? But it's like, oh, there was this great bakery that I saw. Usually when I ask people about recommendations for new cities, it's always like, oh, there's this great bakery in this neighborhood and it's kind of a smaller business. It's, you know, it's family run, and it's kind of, you have to find it, you have to like search for it. And so when I think about like what makes a neighborhood, what gives a neighborhood character and what makes it a place that you remember and want to go back to or want to stay in even, right? So even for people who live there, it's like, oh, I love that I can just go down the street to Hopscotch, and people have rituals. And I mean, what a better way to build community than just know like, oh, on Sunday, I see so-and-so come by and they pick up a pastry and we chat a little bit, we just check in. And it's kind of these like low stakes social interactions where you get exposure to people who might not be quite like you, but you are warm and you're going to be kind of on the lookout. Oh, you didn't come in this week. Like, is everything okay? So kind of having that like kind of soft connection, that's a community building thing, right? That's what a third space does, is that it kind of exposes you to people that aren't necessarily close friends that you're going to go out of your way to reach out to, but you remember them and they're part of your community, and that creates empathy, that creates community building so that you feel part of this community and they feel part of this community as well.
That's awesome. So I want to switch topics just a bit, and I want to talk to you both about advocacy. And what I'm particularly interested in, because, and we can talk about the item that you advocated for and were successful with at council, but I want to talk about that experience from the outside, what it's like to advocate for council and kind of what advice you would give people. But I also want to turn it around, because you're now both insiders to some extent, right? And I want to know if your opinion about advocacy and how to go about it has changed at all now that you're sitting in the seats where people are going to be approaching you with topics. And so let's talk about advocacy a little bit, and maybe it's informative to talk about the item that you helped to bring forward to council.
Sure. So the item that that I think was our biggest success to date was Champaign voted to allow accessory dwelling units last June. So that was part of the incremental development goals that former council member Brooks championed. And what an accessory dwelling unit is it's sometimes called a granny flat, sometimes called a garage apartment. This is where, you know, in a single family house, you can have an extra unit that is not as big. So it's not a duplex, it's not a house divided in half. It's a smaller unit. It can be attached or detached. And you can have either a family member living there or just rent out the units. These are becoming more popular throughout the country. So staff was bringing this forward, and we as Carbonists decided that this was a great opportunity for our community. So we drove a lot of traffic, I think, to the survey. We told everybody we knew, not only, you know, go and fill out the survey, watch the informative video, fill out the survey, and tell all your friends that this is a really important thing. And we also, I think a lot of us shared personal stories about, you know, having lived in an accessory dwelling unit where the rent was cheaper, or knowing people who did, or even, you know, talking about TV shows like Happy Days, where the Fonz lived in an accessory dwelling unit. He lived in an apartment above the garage. And so, you know, reminding people this is a very traditional form of housing that has gone away for a little bit. So we're not talking about a radical new experiment. So we drove traffic to the survey. I think all of us talked to all of our council members, and we went to every meeting where it was being discussed, and we urged everyone else to come out and do the same. And we tried very, you know, we weren't angry, we were excited. We were happy. We were saying, thank you for bringing this forward. Thank you for talking about this. We appreciate this. And we hope that you vote for it.
So talk to me, and Adani, I want to give you a chance too, but talk to me about the experience. And I don't want you to like call out council members or this one didn't call me back, but you know, what's that like to just pick up the phone and or send an email and say, I want to talk to you about this issue? And is it intimidating from the outside? And what are your recommendations for people who have an issue that maybe they want to bring?
I can talk a little bit about that and just kind of say that, like, it does feel really scary. It's like scary. It's like, oh no, what if someone's going to grill me on this, right? I'm not an expert here. I just found this thing that I think is very interesting. I think it would be a good idea to try. Like, oh my, you know, like, are they going to grill me? Is this a test, you know, to figure out like, what are they going to come up with? So there is some intimidation there that comes with saying, hey, I would like to see this thing happen. And then you kind of realize that people are like, oh, interesting. Thank you so much. For people are so generous, so kind, and kind of willing to listen. They ask questions that are helpful, and kind of just realizing that they're also people. I'm very lucky to know a couple of council members and to be like, oh, these are just people who are like me, and they have questions and they have concerns, and they're not fully ready to antagonize anyone out of the gate. So just being earnest about, this is why I think this is really exciting. Could you please look into this? This is, you know, here are my thoughts. This is why I believe this. And I think it would be a really great idea and helpful for our community if this happened. And it was, everyone was delightful. I got wonderful responses back. I got people who just said, you know, thank you. I also had people who were like, oh yeah, like, can you give me a little bit more information about this? Or like, tell me a little bit more. And so to hear other people's interests too was like very heartening, right? It was very exciting to hear like, oh wow, what if they really want to know more? What if they're actually interested? And so it was really fun to be able to see that. And so now it's going to be exciting. I think I'm interested to just be like, well, why not? Why don't we do this? You know? So I'm very excited to reciprocate that and show that on to people who maybe come up to us. And Kathy, I mean, I feel like Kathy is out here making these connections. Like, that's the best thing about kind of being out with Kathy, and we're doing some organizing. And Kathy's like, well, you love having this beer on this patio. What if the sidewalk was bigger? You know? Like, wow, we're having a great, like, wow, you know what? Wouldn't it be great if we just had this trolley and we could just jump over to our band just real quick, just stop by for a show and then come back, you know, have dinner, you know?
And so, right. It's important to have those discussions though.
Yeah. Jumping into it on a very like personal level, and then you connect it, right? Like, that's the magic, is you connect it up to the policy.
So tell me, were you two and your group strategic about coming to the meetings? Because sometimes, you know, groups come and it's more of a loose group. Like, it's just happens to be a bunch of people who are passionate about the same issue, and they land in chambers at the same time. And so everybody kind of gets up and speaks their mind, which is part of democracy and wonderful and messy and all the fun. But it felt like you all kind of thought through how to do that public speaking piece and talk to your members. So tell me a little bit about that and what was the strategy and why?
Because I'd been on the school board and I had had experience with a lot of public comment at meetings. Here was my thought process. First of all, we're all human. Nobody wants a meeting to go on longer than necessary. So we don't want to have 20 people get up and spend their 5 minutes to say the exact same thing. They have every right to do that. They absolutely have every right to do that. But if you're trying to convince human beings, you don't want to antagonize them. So you want to be as to the point as possible. We encouraged people to come up to be shorter than their allotted time. And if all you're going to do is say the exact same thing as somebody else, it's absolutely okay to get up and say, yep, me too. and have that be it, or even to have a speaker say, I'm representing this number of people, and have everybody just wave their hands. So we try to do that. We also try to tell people, like, remember to be positive. Remember that these are your neighbors. These are your community members. And pretty much everybody who runs for, almost everybody who runs for office at a local level is doing it because they want their community to be a better place. So really remembering that, and like, don't yell at people, just say, you know, this is why I feel like this would make our community better. And I hope that you can see it the same way. So that was, I think, my thought process. How about you, Donnie?
I think that we gave people a space to vent a little bit too. So we we let people do 20-minute rants to us. Like, we did it together at Quality before walking into the city council meeting, right? So giving people space to like say like, wow, to me, you know, letting those charged opinions kind of get out there, but just with us, so that we got to kind of commiserate and kind of just like, you know what, like, so we got to get some of that out. So it's not that that didn't exist, but we got to have conversations. And I think the conversations also helped people come up with their own reasons. So we came up with things like, this is why I think these are good ideas. And like, if you like these reasons, or if you agree with these reasons, you can save this as part of your comment. Or something like that. And so giving people a sense of what are the reasons why this is a good idea? Do you agree with these? If not, don't come by, you know, don't give up. But then also we're meeting beforehand to just kind of prep and kind of just check in so that we can kind of walk in as a group. And then in that kind of space where we're just kind of socializing before we go in and sit and be quiet, giving that space to kind of give out that full, like, here's my full 15-minute rant about why this is a good idea and why we should have done this ages ago. And, you know, so giving people space to do that, where it's like, all right, it's out there. And so now I can just give you the point, right? So now at public comment, we can just give the point. It's positive. Again, Kathy and I have been focusing on, we want to say yes to things. We want to tell council that, like, yes, we're excited about this, and we think this is important, and we're noticing what's happening. So we're keeping an eye on it. You know, it's not like everyone is ready to sit in, you know, an hour long meeting every Tuesday. You know, it's not like that's like, oh, like, no, I'm here because I care about this. And so I think that's also part of it, is like being able to be like, well, if Kathy thinks this is important, then maybe we should go and give up an hour to go sit down together. And I'm going to sit next to Kathy and make fun of, no. So it's like having your friends there.
So tell me if, because it sounds like you were really strategic. Now that you're sitting in the seats you're sitting, would you have different advice for people if people are going to approach you?
I guess I don't have super different advice, because I had been on school board, and so I knew a little bit about how to advocate before a public body. I would say that I'm trying to think very strategically about goals. So we do kind of have to like take a step back. We were lucky that accessory dwelling units was already a part of the incremental development goal. So I think it's important, rather than coming in at the end of the process, to think about where we are at the beginning of the process. As Adani said originally, we're talking about policy, right? It's really important to get the policy right. And then we can talk about how to implement each more specific aspect of that policy. So
I think that's great advice. I mean, And I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but I see that all the time at council, where there will be some newspaper headline about something that we're going to vote on a Tuesday night, and people come in charged up about it, which, again, they're right to do, and we're happy to hear them. But what they don't realize is that we've already spent 6 months working with staff on it. We've had 3 study sessions about it. Council is really sort of poised to adopt whatever it is, and they're now coming in. And and making sure that people understand our process, that we have study sessions, that we have staff input, and they get involved at the front end so that their information gets incorporated is really important.
Absolutely.
I think that definitely part of our work at Curbanism is encouraging transparency. And I hope that, like, I mean, I feel like Kathy and I are both on board with trying to do this still, even in a different, sitting on a different level, is encouraging transparency and kind of pushing out what is available, right? So what are the ways? And like, if this is public, we need to let people know, you know? And so I think encouraging that, you know, and I think it's much easier to have people come to like one 30-minute thing once a month or something, you know, where it's like, okay, here's the study session. Just come in, give a 5-minute thing about what goals you would like to see accomplished. And that's a much more sustainable way of organizing than like, no, every week we're going to come in and we're going to yell about something because it's the end of the world if this doesn't pass. And so that's not a sustainable organizing model, right? That's not something that people are going to want to stay in tune with. And so definitely kind of having a sense of like, where are the places where this policy is made, who is making these decisions, and like, how can we communicate with them the things that we would like to see? And so where are those points of interest where we can go in and kind of have like, here is your point. Here is the point that we would like to make, deliver it, you know, and kind of keep going, right? Stay in tune at a safe level, at a, you know, a level that doesn't burn people out, right? We know what it's like to get burnt out.
For sure. So how do you vet issues as a club? And, you know, how do you determine what are you looking at our agendas and driven by, you know, what council might be bringing forward? Or do you have a plan for, as Kathy maybe suggested, you know, getting to us as we're doing our goal setting, or, you know, kind of bringing to council some ideas that you would like to see incorporated?
I think that we are kind of, at this point, I at least am a little bit focused, a little bit more focused on the goals. So not necessarily next smallest step. You know, I did have to go through this massive orientation program. The city has a super robust orientation program for new council members. So that kind of took all of my energy for about a month. And then, you know, just trying to synthesize that information and then think about, you know, so I'm thinking about what is my next step. And in the fall, probably September or October, I know council is going to be doing a goal setting session. And so to me, it kind of seemed like that's probably the next step. It's just like, you know, in your work life or in your personal life, you know, we some of us kind of ping from thing to thing and then nothing really gets done. And so the important thing is to sit down and have a plan, to have long range goals, medium range goals. And so I'm thinking, what are the goals for making our city more, to give us more transportation choices, to give us more housing choices, to make a city that's really, that's more of a community, that's more connected. You know, so I'm trying to figure out what are the upper level statements about that, and then what are the specific steps that we could work on over the next 2 years that would get us there. So I can't say that I have, you know, like a solid plan for what the next step is, but I'm just thinking about what can we look at for goals? What, you know, we need to look, you know, kind of in the medium distance to see what that immediate next step is going to be.
So what I think I'm hearing you talk about though is really council goal setting. So that's in the context of you as a council member. And I guess maybe it's more of a question for Adani, and we haven't been clear. I think you've stepped out of leadership a little bit of Curbanism because you're now a council member. Right? So you're not writing the newsletters and things like that anymore. Is that right?
That is right. I am. Adani has taken over the newsletter, and she's a much better writer than I am. So I feel like the level of the newsletters has gone way up. They're more exciting and interesting and engaging. So that was probably a good thing anyway.
So I guess maybe it's an Adani question is, you know, knowing we're going into goal setting and that council is going to be talking about that, how do you work within the club to then sort of vet issues or things that you want to, you know, bring to Kathy or talk to your council member about or show up at goal setting and say, you know, these are the things we want you to be thinking about?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think it definitely lines up a little bit with what Kathy was talking about as well versus, you know, for city council goals is like definitely a slow burn. I mean, the group is still, I mean, I still think of it as very new, but slow burn because I am concerned about capacity. I have a tendency to overwhelm myself. So we're talking about capacity building. And so that's kind of the first step is like, do we have capacity? But also, are people actually interested in this? Is this something that people are willing to show up to a meeting for? And kind of asking people directly, right? So that's something that happens at socials is kind of, how interested are you in this thing? Is this something that is really important to you? Is this something that we're willing to spend social capital, political capital on? Is this something that we have the literal capacity to take on if it means building up a whole new thing? And so part of that now is we've got kind of these bigger long-term goals. And so right now our slow burn is to kind of build up capacity, which means, you know, are people regularly showing up for just fun stuff like socials? And then how many people are actually sending out their emails that we ask them to send out? And so kind of building up that capacity, bringing people into kind of an executive group kind of where it's like, hey, like you've brought some really great ideas to us. Like, do you want to come in and have a little bit more influence on, you know, what direction we go? Because it really is just based on what people are willing to stand up for, willing to send an email out for. And a lot of what people are saying is that like, I'm interested in this stuff and I just didn't even know it was going on. It's hard to like go out of your way to like, oh, I'm going to spend an hour tonight and watch the city council meeting, you know, like I'm going to put this on, you know, it's a long day after work. So just trying to kind of figure out how, like what
is really well with wine.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch us at 1.25 speed. I highly recommend that.
Yeah, oh, so just try giving funny. It to people, right? giving people information. And if they take it and run with it, then it's like, oh, this might be an issue that we want to push a little bit more on. Who can I meet with to talk about this a little bit more? Who can come and talk to us? Who's willing to share some more information? Because sometimes it's just information gathering, right? Sometimes it's like, who can research who we need to talk to about this thing? And so a lot of this is going to just be the slow burn of capacity building and kind of we're going in a direction and we don't have to go super fast, but we're going to, if we find kind of these small things where I feel like one action can make a difference, then we're going to do that thing because it's one action and we have the capacity to do that. But kind of staying in the direction. So definitely pacing ourselves is a big thing I'm trying to tell myself over and over again.
Well, it's kind of like incremental development, except for with a club, right? You're nothing should change dramatically overnight, but nothing should be immune from change. So I also noticed, and I was looking, I think either on your website, which we should give everybody, which is just CU Urban, well, it's not CU Urbanism, it's C Urbanism, urbanism.org. But, you know, you were also encouraging things like participate in the transportation study, right? Like recognize that is happening. And if you care about, you know, biking and pedestrian safety and, or maybe you just care about driving your car, that's okay too. Either way, you need to get involved and you need to actually fill out the forms, right?
It's a big survey newsletter. We're really into these surveys because I've heard that, nobody responded to the survey or like how did this get made? Well, 5 people responded to the survey and they said they wanted the highway right in the middle of the city. And it's like, that was 5 people. Like, I don't think that, you know, so kind of very big on surveys, just like, no, here is the opinion, you know, here is an opinion, here's people who care about this and think that this is important. So definitely big survey. And sometimes that's the only action some people have time for. So another big thing about that sustainability and capacity building is like, sometimes folks can just do the survey. Sometimes folks can send an email. Sometimes folks can show up to the meeting. Sometimes folks can show up to an extra meeting before the meeting happens, you know? So it's kind of, we're building different levels of how people could be involved. And so I think that that's also another really important way to kind of build capacity and build access for a variety of people.
So how often do you meet? Where do you meet? When do you meet?
So Curbanism Club has monthly socials every second Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And most of the times they happen at Quality because Quality is very close to my house. but we try to jump around a little bit. We've been at 25 o'clock Brewery in Urbana. We've also been to the space. Like yesterday, we went to the space and had dinner together. And so that was really fun. And we sat outside. The space is a multi-use thing, which we really enjoy, multi-use facility. They have shows there. They serve food. They serve alcohol. They've got couches. Finding places that are interesting to us. And, you know, so that's, they meet, the location varies, but a lot of the times they end up at Quality.
And people can go to the website and they can sign up for a newsletter and they can also check out information about meetings, right? So they,
exactly,
they can, yep, do that. So as this continues to grow, what are your ongoing goals for Curbanism?
I would love for us to be a city where it's truly safe to bike everywhere. Even if you are not a super confident cyclist, I would love to be able to, you know, I was thinking about this as I was biking. There's a grocery store, Harvest Market, is quite near to my house. It's only about a mile away, a mile and a half away. And there's bike lanes to get there. But unfortunately, those bike lanes, you know, they aren't protected. They're just painted. The speed limit on that street on Devonshire is, oddly enough, 35 miles an hour. And so sometimes when, you know, like I have been biking my whole life, and so I feel relatively comfortable biking, but I'm guessing like a lot of kids or older people or somebody who's new to riding a bike, they're just not going to feel comfortable biking in a painted bike lane next to traffic that's going at least 35 miles an hour and often faster. So a long-term goal of mine is, how do we connect places in ways that's truly safe for everyone outside of a car? That is a really, really big deal for me. And I would say that housing, when we get to the point where there's abundant housing of different types and different levels all across the city, and that housing is connected in so that you do not have to use a car to get to the grocery store, the library, city council meetings, school board meetings, where you work, where you go to school, all of those things. Like, I guess, you know, those two things work together. And if we could have a city that truly achieved those things, I would feel like we had accomplished an amazing amount.
Kathy scooped me, y'all. Definitely abundant housing. Definitely, you know, as an extrovert, I have to say that I want more placemaking. I want downtown Urbana to get to Champaign's level. I want Champaign to get even bigger. I know that there's already stuff happening to create our little plaza right outside of the Orpheum. I'm very excited about that. I'm glad to make it easier to close down streets. I can't wait until there will be so many people downtown that we have to close the streets all the time. So I'm very excited to start placemaking in a really big way. And that's for people, but also I think it's good for our community. It's good for our city to have places where a small business can come in and not be priced out, because there's just an abundance of people that it can sustain. If they can sustain businesses, because there's a lot going on. I want there for families to be able to hang out downtown safely without having cars speed by them, or risk, you know, hurting other people. So I'm really excited to for an abundance of housing so that we have a variety of people who can access all of the great amenities in the city and all of our cities in Urbana and Champaign and Savoy even.
Right. Ooh. Well, and it helps to incorporate socioeconomic diversity and general diversity, right? You to have those variety of housing types and options. And I think all of that's really, really important. I think one of the things that has impressed me about both of you is that you're realists, along with, you know, sort of dreaming about what you would like to see our future be, right? And maybe it's that incremental development again, that you're slowly moving towards the goal, recognizing that we're not gonna, you know, undo hundreds of years of housing policy or transportation policy overnight. And that we're not gonna probably tear down neighborhoods that are on, you know, outside of the core of the city.
Absolutely not. We want to shut, yeah, that would absolutely not be our goal. I do also want to follow up on one thing. This is not just a nice to have. All of this form of development is actually the only financially sustainable way for our city to pay for itself long term. One of the things that I was struck by when I was campaigning were the number of people, you know, I would say, "Do you have any city issues?" And they would say, "Well," they would say, taxes are too high and there's too many potholes in the streets. And they wouldn't recognize the disconnect between those two things. And I think, you know, people need to understand that this sprawling method of development that we've been doing for, you know, kind of the last 50 to 60 years is not a traditional way of city building. And we just, you know, we can't pay for it. It's not sustainable. We don't have the taxes to support it. When you have infrastructure that supports more people, the same infrastructure supports more people, then those costs are spread out among more people. And so our taxes can be lower and we can still have better infrastructure. So I think being a realist in terms of this is how we make our cities work financially is super important.
So I want to ask you about that, because you talked about it's not the traditional way to build cities. So it has been, I'm 56, it's been the traditional way to build a city in my entire lifetime, right? So I don't know any different. So tell me about what would be maybe, and I'm going to use your words, right? More economical. Like, what should the cities be looking at? And the other thing I think it's worth making clear is we're not an outlier, right? So it's not like Champaign like said, "Oh, we're just going to grow the way we're going to grow. We don't care what the rest of the country is doing." I think for the last 50 years, the entire country sort of turned upside down the way we build cities, right? And now we're looking at it and thinking, "Oh, maybe that's not going to work so well long term," right? And so talk about what we did before, you know, the last 50 years.
So I'm not, you know, I'm not a history expert. I'm not an urbanism expert. But what I have learned from those who are is that more traditional city building is you start with, you know, an outpost for whatever reason, you know, you have a small city. As more people come, the core of that city becomes denser and people will start to settle outside that core. And then as more people come, the dense core becomes bigger and the single family houses are sort of scattered along the outside. But it's very, very traditional that cores of cities would get denser. People would build up as they were building out. I think, you know, we need to be mindful. We need to say this, a tremendous amount of this, is due to redlining and racism, and people wanting to, not live with people who didn't look like them. And so, they would move further out. There was white flight from the cities. And as they were living further away from where they actually worked, then they would need to widen those roads. They need to widen the highways, create the interstate highway system, in fact. And a lot of those highways divided traditional neighborhoods that a lot of minoritized populations lived in those neighborhoods. And we were building highways directly through the neighborhoods and making life a lot harder, making the air more polluted for people who were less able to afford to ameliorate the effects of that. So as I said, this is a very, the traditional city building way is to densify the core. And only add on as we needed to, instead of, you know, having a core and then building way out on the edge. And then if we need more living space, build further out on the edge instead of densifying what we already have, instead of doing
and building way out on the edge means we're extending roads and
yes.
sewers and
yes.
and things that then end up eventually needing replacement and
yes.
And
the people who live there, it's a much smaller tax base. So the amount of money that you're actually getting paid into the pot, right, to pay for repairs, it's actually fewer people out there, but you still have to maintain the same amount of water and road and electric, you know, all of that maintenance is still for the same amount. You know, you're housing, you know, 100 people in one spot, but now it's 25 out on the edges, right? So then there's a one would say that people who live at the core in denser areas are subsidizing the people who live on the outskirts of town.
No, I will tell you, because I have to stand up for my constituents, who I'm sure I will hear from, that they certainly don't all feel that way. And there's, you know, it's not like tax, there is zero tax for the people who are out. And it may be that there are higher costs to the city for them being out there, but they are, you know, in more expensive houses paying a significant amount of tax. And so it doesn't.
So there's an incentive to get new neighbors.
Them like they are being subsidized.
I think it's really important that we affirm that we are paying very high taxes. I live in a single family house on what used to be the edge of town. And I do pay a lot in taxes. And so, you know, when I tell people you're not actually paying the enough to maintain the road in front of your house, that feels like an attack. And it is not meant to be an attack. None of us, you know, I didn't buy my house saying, well, I'm sure glad that downtown gets to subsidize my house. That's not why I bought my house. I bought my house because that was the kind of house that, you know, my parents always wanted to live in. So I think this is not an attack on anyone. I really think it's really interesting to read the Strong Towns book, or there's a series of videos. They do Strong Towns videos. There's also a guy who does YouTube videos, Not Just Bikes. And he does a really good job of explaining the Strong Towns concept. So
they
none
also,
of us
don't
chose
they have
this.
They've got a website and podcasts and things.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. And the Strong Towns website and book come at it in a much more conservative way. So I think that if you're a more traditional conservative political background, you might feel more comfortable with the way Chuck Marone describes those concepts. He's very good at talking to people on both sides of the political aisle and explaining that, you know, why the numbers work the way they do.
Well, and I think one of the things that's important about, you know, a club like Curbinism is that you're giving people the opportunity to come together and talk about the issues, right? So we may not agree on every single piece of all of the things that you guys are concerned about, but we have this opportunity for an exchange of ideas and to really talk about what do we want our city to be in 20 years or even 10, right? Or are there things we could do in some neighborhoods that would mean change next summer or in 5 years? And you know, you can do small things along the way that can make a really big difference. And you guys are providing that opportunity for that type of a discussion.
Yes. And again, it's all about housing choice. It is not about forcing anybody to live in a kind of house that they don't want to live in. I tend to think that if you've experienced a dense neighborhood that was designed thoughtfully, that you would actually want to continue doing that. Across the country, neighborhoods with higher walkability scores are, the houses there are much more expensive because people want to live there. But until you've seen it, until you've experienced it, maybe even in your own town, it's hard to imagine why this is better. So I think we're seeing
some of it, right? We're seeing people move back into the core.
Yes.
We're also seeing with neighborhood commercial kind of recreating mini cores out in, I mean, we don't have suburbs, but out in those outlier neighborhoods.
Yep.
So that people have that same walkability, even though it isn't to a downtown core, right?
Yes.
Because people do want those.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just think about access to amenities, right? Like access to Sholem Aquatic Center, right? Like how easy is it to get there on foot or by bike? So having that proximity and like having the value reflected in our infrastructure of just like, oh, it's so important for kids to be able to walk to this area and be able to get there or bike there.
For sure. So is there anything I could talk to you guys forever about all of these interesting topics, but we're getting close to our hour. Is there anything either of you want to add that we haven't covered?
I would just love to talk to more people about this. So if you're listening to this podcast and either you agree or disagree with these ideas, but if they sparked your interest in a positive or a negative light, we would love to talk to you more. We would love to talk about the future of the city. So, you know, shoot us an email or sign up for the newsletter list, come to a social and let's talk about what we want Champaign-Urbana to look like.
I think also, Kathy, because you're a council member, people can get you very easily by going to the city website and they can click on your picture and send you an email for council related stuff.
Yep.
And Adani, I think you've even got a plan commission email address. I mean, certainly if it's about curbanism, which we started out talking about, they can go through there to get you. But both of you are easily accessible and, you know, now in spots where not only can you gather information, but you can help to influence some of the policy as we shape what our city continues to look like.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you.